Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, issue 45. 45, I can't believe it. We're still kicking and going. It's been a...
45 and still alive.
Yeah, it's been a fun week. Interesting news dropping. Some interesting shows dropping this week. Just made like craziness. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in, checking us out. We are now officially on YouTube and on Facebook live streaming. So Kane and I, you can see our pretty faces and hear our lovely voices. You guys can jump into the chat. It is open. Anybody wants to make comments, say hey, what's up? We can see you. We can talk to you as we are doing this. And again, this is going to be a continuation of the podcast. You will be able to still get this one throughout the week, like normal. So, how you be doing?
Same old. How you doing, sir? Good to see you.
I'm here.
Another. Yeah.
Oh, so did you get a chance to listen to our podcast this week for the Midnight Movie? Did you get a chance to listen?
Yeah, one of the class. Yeah. it was very interesting. That's all I'm going to say. It was good. It's good. I loved a lot. It's just like when you have that third dynamic in there, it just makes a whole lot of difference, especially with a third, especially with, like, with a sweaty like Steve. So,
yeah.
Talking about Star Wars, it just kind of makes your creative juices flowing. So,
yeah, it's fun to especially to re-listen to it, like, you know, months later, because I you know, we were in the moment, so to speak, and it was fun to just actually sit down and listen to it. So we're gonna get going with what we call our little news department or our news section. But first, actually, I forgot about that. We had two passings this week in the geek community. It's been a very quiet month, 2 months or so. But yeah, we just recently had two passings that really kind of, one, it shocked me. Last time I seen him, I think it was in the House of Thousand Corpses. But it was actor Michael J. Pollard. I think that was probably the one he was best known for.
Wasn't he in Day of the Dead as well?
I know he was Tales of the Crypt, like Dick Tracy.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm. Who did he play in Dick Tracy?
I think he was. Actually, I believe he was one of the thugs. I was going to say he was a taxi driver.
No. Wait. Maybe he was the guy that was, I think he was sort of like a spy. He was like a cop, but he was like wiring. This movie's like almost 20 years old.
Yeah, dude, I haven't seen it.
But Al Pacino's character was, I'm just going off memory. I believe he played like he was a cop, and he was basically staking out in Al Pacino's character's like club, and he was like above the room where they would make all the, you go beat up this guy and rob this amount of money or whatever it was. And I think he was the guy that was like keeping wiretaps on them, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I could be dead wrong.
Jump in the chat. It's been a long, long time. The one that always sticks out for mine was he was in the original Star Trek series. He played Dan. He was a leader of this band of like feral teenagers. And you're an old person. You don't tell me what to do. Because I think if I remember correctly, this episode, it's been a while for this one too. But I think this is the one where like the adults were dying off. After like you reach a certain age, but also he did play one of Superman's big foes as well, Mr. Mixaplex, in the animated series.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
so that voice, not just the face, but the voice as well.
If you look at his face, he's very Mr. I mean, basically, he looks like Mr. Mixaplex, especially that photo we have up there right now. I mean, just sad to see that he goes. Another one of our community gone, and. It's always tough.
Yeah, it is tough. Yeah, especially somebody that was like around for a lot. I mean, when you actually sit down and look at his catalog of movies and TV shows that he did, he's been around forever. I just like scratched the surface. Anything pretty much in the 60s, 70s, he was a regular on the TV show. So yeah, he will be missed. Also this week. We have a one close to, I guess, kind of close to our Marvel fans' hearts. We have Tom Lyle for Spider-Man. He also was one of the first ones. He was an artist, worked with Tim Dixon on Robin, the first run of Robin, when Robin actually got his own miniseries by itself. He was the artist on that, but he was primarily known for, and I'm sure you're going to spit when I say it, but he was a big part of the Clone series, the sagas for Spider-Man. His artwork was good. He wasn't a writer, but what he did for the artwork was pretty decent.
Well, the costume itself doesn't look bad. I mean, if you look at that costume, that iteration of the I hate even mentioning his name, the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, that costume has kind of like taken a life of its own. If you think about it, it's like been in many iterations, video games, comic books. I believe it was used on the Scarlet Spider as well.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Homecoming. Peter Parker had a form of that suit on.
Yeah, he did.
It's almost like his homemade suit. So, you know, the artwork was great. It's just, you know, everything else about it, I didn't like too much.
But yeah, he passed away this week. So another, you know, member of the of our geek community has gone. So he will be missed.
You will be missed, sir. Rest in peace.
So what we're going to go ahead and we're going to jump into what we call the admissions ward. So here we go.
News from the admissions ward.
All right.
I love that song, by the way. Just gets me pumped up, the admissions ward.
So what do you have first up, sir, for your admissions ward? I'm going to let you go ahead and take this one over.
Well, guess what? The Matt Reeves Batman continued its casting, and this week they made actually a surprising cast. I mean, the great John Turturro, who you know as Jesus Carmine from The Big Lebowski. And from those horrible Transformers. Actually, he's done a lot of stuff, too. He's been cast to play my boss, Carmine Falcone. This is, I believe, counting TV shows. Well, actually, if you count the TV shows, the animated, and the movies, this will be the fourth iteration of Carmine Falcone.
Will this be?
And, yeah, fourth. If you count the animated series, you count Gotham, and if you count the movies, he was in Batman Begins, played by somebody. I forgot.
No, he hasn't made it in. There was some news that dropped on another Bat show about Falcone. So never mind. Keep going. I think he's going to be.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. He has been cast as the fourth Carmine Falcone in the Bat Universe, and this cast continues to grow each and every day, daily. Another good pick. Looks like Matt is going for more of the character type actors. And John can definitely bring that edge to it. Don't look at the goofy roles that he's been in. If you look at the more serious ones, he's actually one of the better actors out there. In The Big Lebowski, he was good. He did like another movie, I believe, too, where he was an assassin.
Yeah, Turturro's done some really good stuff. Probably he's more well known for the goofy ones, but when you really look in his catalog of what he's done in the past, he's definitely got a lot more.
He's got a lot more stuff going on, I know. But just an interesting note. I want to see what kind of version we're going to get of Falcone, because the animated series, I thought, did pretty well when you have a built-up to Falcone. I thought Gotham did a great job, actually, with the actor they had on here. They made, you know, because he was more... In Batman Begins, he was more of a goofy-type character, I would say. And in Gotham, they kind of redeemed him a little bit, made him more menacing. So I'm wondering what kind of angle John's going to go with. I hope they go with the long Halloween version of Falcone.
Well, from everything I've read, that's what they were been talking about. That's kind of what the source material of that.
Because to me, that's my favorite one. I mean, if you think about it, this is a big mob boss stuff. He's almost like a John Gotti, you know, if you think about it. And he's in control of these families. He controls all those families in Gotham. And if you have ever read, I'm sure you have read him. Some of our fans out there have read Batman Year One. Carmine Falcone is the first villain that he takes down, first syndicate that he takes down en route to building the Bat Legend. So it'll be interesting to see him on screen again. And, you know, this is being like almost the eighth villain cast in this movie. I'm almost afraid now with all these villains being cast of it being overcrowded. But
they've already announced two. Who else?
They've announced Cobblepot.
Right.
You got the Riddler. You got Falcone. Now this is the third.
Okay.
Catwoman, you don't know. That could be either side.
Yeah. That they haven't. I don't. I mean, I think those are just rumor mills. I don't think we've actually heard from the Reeves camp about those yet. So I mean, but you're going to want your standard mob boss, just kind of like what they did in the original Batman Begins series. You know how it was just it was Falcone, but then you also had your Scarecrow. So I think that if they stick to kind of that tradition, I think it'll be okay.
I hope so. Man, that's the most important thing, is to actually get a story with him. And if you do that, you're going to be good. I mean, I'm just wondering how he's going to fit into this whole mix, because if you think about it, the Riddler's very narcissistic, and you have Cobblepot, who takes the place of that crime boss. Although with Colin Farrell being Cobblepot, I'm always interested to see how they're going to play that now, because, you know, Cobblepot's always known as that bigger type of, guy with a lot of girth on him.
Yeah.
And now you have a smooth talking, good looking dude who's going to play Cobblepot. So,
You think what they did in Gotham too. I mean, that wasn't Cobblepot. He was skinny. The guy they got to play, Cobblepot.
And, I thought, Robin Taylor Lord. Yeah, he was great.
Perfect. He wasn't your rotund little, weasel. He was something different.
I think I told you like many times of Gotham, like the first two seasons, I felt he carried that show.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I thought he was the best part of that show. I thought everybody else was trash, but he was like the one that holding it together. Then eventually, as the seasons went along, there were like better characters that actually evolved and actually got better. Like after a while, I enjoyed one character, which I couldn't stand at the beginning, but I felt like her overall arc, she actually became a well-rounded character. And I was like, oh, okay, you're right. So, but yeah, Carmine Falcone is going to be in the Batman, which will be out in 2021 in July. Mike, what do you got for us?
Yeah, for this one, for me, I actually have a bit of kind of sticking in the Reeves category. Well, not really Reeves. So it's more Batman category. There was talk, this week they had the announcement of the Joker movie. It's breaking and doing a possible sequel. And I thought we could take the time to shoot the possibilities of what they could do, because they were talking about just drew a blank on his name, the director, Todd Phillips, giving Todd Phillips a chance to to do the sequel, but also to do maybe open up the book on the DC villains and give them more of a grittier take, a more realistic take, like they did for Joker. So what would you like to see? One or two of the villains that are in the Batman's, amazing rogue gallery.
Two-Face is the guy. I felt like out of all the characters that has been portrayed on screen, as far as like the Bat movies goes, I think that he's gotten the short of the change. In Batman Forever, he was horrible. That's not even worth talking about. In The Dark Knight, like, the Harvey Dent part of the character was great, but when he became Two-Face, it almost, like, the movie should have ended, like, spoilers, the movie's almost 10 years old, but the movie should have ended when the Joker is just, when Batman catches the Joker, like, floating outside, the building.
Yeah, hanging out.
When you had that extra 30 minutes, when you had that extra minute with Harvey Dent, it just kind of felt like, I get what was going on, but I just felt that, Harvey Dent deserves his own movie. Like, Two-Face as a character himself, he is the living, amalgamation of just duality. Like literally, he literally has his personas and his face split right in half, and they haven't gotten to that point where I want to see the struggle within, like that mental struggle, like should I do it this way, should I do it that way, should I appease to my dark evil side and kill this guy, or should I, no, I'm gonna take him to jail, that's what, I'm a district attorney, and he's a district attorney, which makes it even more interesting. So I just felt if you could do like a gritty take with Two-Face. And you actually explore, how did he become, how did his personality get split so bad? You could show, almost like Joker did, what they showed, that he was abused as a child. You could do a little bit of that maybe with Harvey. Show where he grew up. Like, why did he develop the big, bad, hard mentality? If you ever watched the animated series, that's what they called it. You could do, too. If you want to do Harvey Dent, what's the name of the psychiatrist? Bruce's psychiatrist. I'm drawing a blank. It's Bruce's psychiatrist. She was in the animated series. Leslie Tompkins. You could throw Leslie Tompkins in this movie as well. And maybe you could have her maybe a little bit older than Harvey. And maybe he's going to the shrink. And maybe she's trying to dive in deep and see where that, that persona is coming from. And then eventually maybe he snaps and then goes from there. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. I just felt out of all the rogue galleries you could do, I think Two-Face is the guy you definitely could do.
Well, I always thought Leslie was a doctor, not a psychiatrist.
No, she was a psychiatrist.
Was she? Okay. Then who's the doctor? The older lady that's always healing him up.
Also Leslie Tompkins.
Okay, so in other iterations, she is also a doctor. Okay, so I'm not mistaken there.
Yeah, she's a doctor, but they have never, like in the animated series, she was a psychiatrist, but she was also a doctor.
But that was the animated series. And pretty much everything else, she's been a doctor.
Yeah, she's been a doctor. Okay. Like, even in Gotham, she was a doctor.
Right.
She wasn't I think she was a psych. No, she was a straight up doctor.
Yeah, she was the.
Okay.
Yeah, she worked in the morgue there. So yeah, she was a doctor. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think you keep going back to your mind keeps running back to the animated series. I'm thinking more outside of it, not just what the animated series did, but what other ones are out there. You know, that's why I was wondering. Okay. Now for me, I've always think, and I think they've missed out on it, and they've never done a version of him, is Clayface. I think with Clayface, the visual effects of it would be amazing. It can be done now, but there's the human side of Clayface that most people forget. And really, in some iterations of actually currently in the current run of Batman, Clayface is actually like turned around and has actually now not just a villain, but he's one of the good guys. He works with them, you know. And
yeah, you work Batman now, yeah.
And you've had that with, you know, with Penguin. Sometimes Penguin's like, yeah, you know, working against you, not going to work for me. I'll help you out a little bit. So there's been those moments of that. And I think Clayface is just a stronger character. And again, we'll go back to the animated series. The animated series is really what brought that out. When you actually see a couple of those episodes with him, when they introduce him, just his story and the pain he's going through.
Yeah, he's a struggling actor, and he wants to continue to maintain his looks. And then he gets some sort of cream that he puts on his face. That eventually it's a chemical that turns his body into what would become Clayface. You know, and there's a like I agree. There's a lot, and I think he hasn't been touched. Like, he was touched in the Arkham games. That's about it.
Yeah,
but he's never been given his full arc. And you could do like a straight up like. Like Blumhouse is the key legendary for doing these low budget independent like sort of horror films that they cost like almost $2 to make, but they make like a huge profit. You could do a Clayface movie just like that. You know, you don't, like I said, you don't have the budgetary and the CGI effects you could use are just very minimal. You could even use practical if you wanted to be bold about it. I mean, he really doesn't like, it's more like the character driven thing that's him. Like, when he turns into Clayface, that should be a moment like, oh my God, you know, this guy went from this to this, and it's like a nightmarish quality almost.
Oh. Yeah, very true. Yeah, that could be like that could be the horror version of Batman, you know, with that.
Yeah, and you could throw the Man Bat in there too, one of our favorites that has yet to be touched. But yeah, Clayface would be an interesting choice. I wouldn't mind either of them. I think they're both solid choices.
Yeah, I just
as long as it's not like
go ahead. No, I was gonna say as long as it's not one of the ones we've already seen, I'd love to see something fresh.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to see Riddler. I want to see Penguin. Like, I've seen those guys. I definitely want to see Joker anymore. I think I'm kind of jokered out, to be honest with you. I mean, I love the movie. I think, like, I'm serious. Like, the Joker, I'm probably one of those people who believe, like, DC should put the Joker away for a while and just put him in a box. And because I think he's just so overused now. I think the one run they have in comics with the amalgamation of that Joker, I think that's a great character in himself, but I'm like, the Joker himself, I just think he's just to me almost getting to the point of being overplayed.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to see him go away for a while and, you know, put him in the box and then bring somebody else out like I haven't seen in a while, like Clayface, Harvey Dent. There's so many rogues you could use. I mean, just use them. You don't have to keep recycling over and over again. That's why I'm glad with this Matt Reeves film, I don't think we're going to see the Joker at all.
Yeah, I hope not.
I think you're going to hear like something like he's in Arkham, he's escaped, but I don't think you'll see him. And I think that's a good move.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's what I loved about the very first Batman with Nolan. It was just the card. He wasn't the original, you know, villain. It was a straight up borderline detective, you know, of more of Ra's. And but yeah, you just saw that playing card at the very end, and everybody that was in the know in the audience went, "Ooh, what's coming?" And that was perfect. In fact, I think they could have gotten away with not having him in the second one also, and just kept that hint and
they could have
that love that thought going, "Oh man, I'd love to see what's going to come up next.
Yeah, you could have almost, like, you know, unfortunately he passed away, but if he was still alive, you could have done a second movie without the Joker. You could have done somebody else, and at the ending of the second movie, you could see the bat signal being lit up in the sky, and almost a Batman Returns, you could have, like, the Joker just looking up at it, and then you hear the laughter, and then, you know, credits.
Yeah.
And then you can go to the next movie. But, you know, that's just nitpicking, you know, what could have, should have, so.
Yeah, no, her. What we love to do. So what do you have next on your list?
Hence why we're here. Oh, boy. Well, our favorite, Kathleen Kennedy.
Your favorite, by the way.
The president of Star Wars. Yeah, well, your favorite as well. Kathleen Kennedy, the president of Star Wars Films at the moment, producer. Highly successful producer, by the way. Was interviewed by, I believe it was Variety Magazine. And she was talking about the struggles and, like, getting filmmakers to do Star Wars movies. And a lot what she said made us a lot of sense. You have to understand, if you don't know who Kathleen Kennedy is, very successful producer. She's produced some of the biggest movies of all time. E.T., I think she was a exec producer on...
She pretty much did everything in the 80s.
She's got dough, and she knows what to do. As a producer goes, she's probably the best of all time. When it comes to creative decisions, that's where I think Mike and me are going to have a little bit of a fight on, because I think creatively, she said something in the Variety magazine, which I'll get to right now, is basically saying that Star Wars is a hard film to make, which we understand, you know. But she said that there are no comics, there are no novels, there is nothing to go on to make these movies. And that's what bugged me, because you're basically saying that the people who have, and it's not even the legend stuff, I'm talking about the stuff coming out like now, in the last 5 years, 10 years, you have people making comics, you have people making video games, and you sat there as a producer when you were first brought on, word for word, and you can go to YouTube and look it up, she said verbatim, all the EU is all legend stuff. Everything being made from here on out, video games, TV series, animation, movies, is all canon. Everything. And she hasn't done any, like, they barely mention anything in the movies. Slight references to some of the series. Like, the series do more, makes do a lot better job of, like, tying things together. But she has not done that in the movies. And when she said that, I was like, wow, that's kind of like a slap in the face to all those creators out there who make content for Star Wars, saying that there's nothing out there to go on. That's what bugs me.
I think you like a lot of people out there, and a lot of there's a bunch of, like, YouTubers out there that do it. They get this angry hard on for Kathleen Kennedy. They just love to hate her. And I think anything she says, most people take instantly negative. And I didn't take that with her. You heard her say one thing. I heard her say something completely different. I think what she meant was a lot of the, like you were saying, the expanded universe is off limits. And to create that world after those expanded universes are gone, the legends is gone. Yes, they've made this world. She's been part of that. Even though people just put her name onto the Star Wars movies, she's there for Mandalorian. She was there for Rogue One. She was the creator that helped create a lot of that stuff as well. People forget it. They just look at the bad and just, you know, spit fire at her that way. I don't think that she was going negative towards those writers and slapping them in the face. I just think she was saying, as an overall, as growing forward, it's going to be difficult. That's how I took it. And I don't think it's all that bad.
But the way she said it,
do you,
and the
you,
actions
you,
she's done
you
over
read
the
it.
Years,
it. You read it. You didn't see hear her say it, did you?
I read the whole article.
I read the article too, and I heard her say it one way. You're putting your negativity, I think, towards her into what she says. And you and I will completely – I will give you a laundry list of things that connect
the – any kind of content that you could use.
Well, no, I'll give you a laundry list.
I mean, you don't have to use, like, anything in the back to make the movies. Good.
Well, no, I was saying I can give you a laundry list. We've done this a couple of weeks ago, a laundry list of what them connecting. You keep saying that they don't connect anything. They connect. They don't connect enough for you, but they still connect.
Yeah, but she's saying that there's nothing that she could use going forward for the movies.
Well, nothing. To create. There's nothing now to create this on, because they're not long. They're no longer doing.
I'm talking about. Yeah, but they've cherry picked from some of the EU, which is kind of crazy. I just think that statement is kind of odd, and just someone who just, like, producer wise, she knows what she's doing. I think she like I think what she's doing right now with the Mandalorian is great too. But I don't. She's not a creative head. She's basically saying, yeah, go ahead and do that. You know, Filoni and Favreau, you guys do that. That's why the movie, the show is so good.
So that's not the case for the movies. She doesn't look at JJ and go, oh, you go on and do your thing.
I don't think so.
It goes both ways. You think she's got more hands on in the movies than the TV series?
I believe because I think so.
Okay.
I think so because those are billion-dollar movies.
And of you know course, how you know how much they spend on this. You know how much they spend on the Mandalorian. It's not pocket change that they spend on the Mandalorian.
No, it's not cheap. No, it's not cheap. Not the movies neither.
But that's what I said. I think a lot of people just want to just grab and bash on her and just go one way and don't think about what good things she's done, why she's been in charge. They jump at the negative. They go for the movies, and I understand the movies are there.
She's made the money.
And yeah, I mean, she has
made the producer. She's done her job.
Yeah, I get it. But I just, like I said, I think just people like want to just latch and just like grab on her and just tear her down when people forget about the good things she's done. And I think, honestly, when she makes this comment, she's talking about going forward. From here on out, we don't want to talk about the Skywalkers any longer. This is so there's nothing now. This is all new going forward. And I think that's, to me, was what she was getting at, that going forward, the stories are going to be harder because we don't have the Skywalker saga and those characters anymore.
But she didn't say that. She said it from the past that we don't have anything. If she would have said like, okay, we can't rely on the Skywalker saga anymore, then I get it. But when you say there's nothing out there, it just like it, that. But I literally have a Star Wars comic right now.
I know. I've got nothing? Tons of them too. There's content out there. I think she was talking about something else. That's all. And I just, like I said, I just think the you're just too much negativity towards her, and then people jump on her. I watched it all week on YouTube. Couldn't tell you how many people just jumping down her throat. I'm like, dear God, it's just
where there's smoke, there's fire, and her contract is up in 2021. She's gonna hit a home run with the Rise of Skywalker, and I think after that, she just bring some new creative people inside and just go forward, forward, like. That's it. She's done a great job.
And you can't say
done a great job. Like,
She's been involved in everything.
Everything creative. I just disagree, especially like her handling of directors. That's a big thing too. Like, how many directors have she's fired and let go? Like during mid production, like during the whole film of Solo, like Miller there. What happened? Oh, you know what? Nah.
Didn't
you do your homework before you hired these guys?
Yeah, but
she did it with Gareth Edwards too.
Yeah, but
and Rogue One.
Well, how many movies lose directors halfway through? I mean, there's a lot of movies out there. So again, I think you're going. Well, she's doing this. A lot of other producers have done this.
Colin Trevorrow too. That's another one that was supposed to do Rise of Skywalker.
Maybe that's just what their ideas weren't working. I mean, we get too much window, like looking through a window into Hollywood, and we want to say stuff about it when we don't really know person was planning.
A lot of things I agree with, but during the interview process, let's just say I'm Kathleen Kennedy, I'm going to interview you. Okay, Mike, come on in. Yeah, let's talk about a Star Wars movie. All right, give me your pitch for your Star Wars movie, that like during the opening interview. All right, I haven't hired you yet. Okay, Mike has some good points here. Mike, if I like your idea, I'm gonna call you back. Okay, you leave. 2 days later, I give you a call. Hey, Mike, I have this synopsis that you gave me here when I interviewed you. This, and that. You know what? That's pretty good. But once you come back in the office, I just want to add a couple more things. Okay, I want you to put this in there. I want you to put that in there. I want you to put that there. Okay, no problem. Okay, you start filming in 3 months, and here's your budget. Here's a cash sheet and go. Okay. That's what she did with a lot of the directors. She would admit it, like they did for Colin Trevorrow, like she did for Gareth Edwards as well. Only thing with Gareth Edwards is he decided, hey man, I don't want to ruffle any feathers. I'll go with the flow. Like, what these guys are you get into when you interview them. It's like when you're hired for a job, what you got to do and you're interviewing for that job for. And being pulled out like midway through production, like Lord Miller, where it's just like very baffling. Like, wait a minute, during that interview process, you didn't know about all this, what they wanted to do? It's very mind boggling.
Well, it's business. I mean, I've hired people before, and I was like, halfway through it, you're like, hey, you're not working out. Bye. Sorry. It's just like, it's the same way with this. And this costs more money. So I think I can understandably see that her jumping quickly because, like you said, it's a lot of money for those movies. And I've seen people get into a job, and you're like, hey, this job's not for me. Bye. Okay, it's not. Leave. So, like I said, I think she's doing her job, and she's doing it right. Again, my personal thing is I think everybody just jumps down her throat because of the bad things that have happened, but they never look at the good things. Just like anything happens, people will talk about the bad situations, never what somebody did that was good. And that's just how people I see people talking to Kathleen Kennedy or about Kathleen Kennedy. Alrighty, so what we got next? Actually, I guess kind of like in the Hollywood, I guess the pipeline in a way. A lot of talk about. Did you get hear a lot of the earfuls of with Elizabeth Banks and Charlie's Angels?
Yeah,
oh my God, man! I was quite shocked to read some of that. I was quite shocked to see that she makes the comment that it's men's faults for not letting that movie succeed.
Yeah, I don't think it was guys' faults. I just think your movie sucked. I think that's the easy way to say it. You know, you can say the show, but, oh, well, you just don't give our films a chance. There's been 100 Spider-Man movies. Yeah, agreed. I get that. But you know what? Maybe your movie sucked. You ever thought about that? Maybe nobody wanted to watch it?
I know. Honestly, I got to tell you, I saw two trailers, and in what little I did see, I don't think there was a big enough like promotion for it. And what I did see didn't interest me. Yes, it was very PC for nowadays that they were more alpha females. But to me, Charlie's Angels were alpha females. But at the same time, there was this tongue-in-cheek sexiness behind them, and that's what made them that show. When she threw out that Spider-Man comment, there's been a whole bunch of different Spider-Man, but Spider-Man never, in all the movies, you never changed the core of what Spider-Man was. You changed his attitude, or maybe you changed what he looked like, or the age of his aunt, or you did something a little minor change to him, but you never changed the core of what Spider-Man is. And when you go to take what I consider a classic TV series, and you change the core of what those characters are and the core of what that show is about, you lose everything that it is. And also, it's from the 70s, and I understand nostalgia, but nobody cares about that anymore. And I got to really be honest, I knew Kristen Stewart was in it, and that was it. I knew nobody else. I'd never seen any of the other girls. You may call me old, I'm out of it, whatever. I don't know who the other girls were, so there was no reason for me to even want to go see. And that was a lot of what I had heard. And I think the other thing that she had said that really ticked me off was that she had made a comment that, that men don't, go to see strong female women characters. And I know a lot of people have talked through this out there. You look at a lot of people went to go see Captain Marvel. A lot of people went to go see Wonder Woman, Alita Battle Angel, all these movies within the last year or so.
Alita Battle Angel.
And and I've gone to see every single one of those opening night. So don't tell me that it's not that we don't want to go see women fight and do great. Lucy? What's the one?
Anna, Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, great movies, and I went to go see all of them, but that one and then who was it? The the poster child for failed reboots, the director for the Ghostbusters all female cast, he came out and to defend her, making the same comment that it was because of us that
this is an easy comment. it's all oversaturated. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I mean, wasn't it Elizabeth Banks in like the older Sam Raimi Spider-Man films too? Didn't she play Betty Brant?
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, you are right. Yeah.
So why the hell is she complaining about comic book movies? That probably helped her launch her career. I mean, shut up, Betty. Relax.
Yeah. It's just funny to watch.
It's just easy to play the, nobody wants to watch it because, it's strong women. No, nobody want to watch it because the movie sucked. That's why. It wasn't because, the movie would.
Yeah, nobody. Sorry. Yeah, pulling the victim card, and I was like, we can't pull the victim card as well as still saying that we have to have these strong characters and advertising these strong women. It's like, me personally, just show, just put a strong woman in a movie and don't, we don't have to wave the flag. I think that's another thing that maybe is sometimes turns certain people off, and it may be some guys as well, but I think you start waving the strong women character flag. I just want to go in and see a good story. I want there to be strong people. So I don't understand the rest of it.
Yeah. It's a little strange, but you know,
yeah.
It is what it is. We're in that, you know, mentality right now. So we're just going to have to, you know, take it as it goes. That's what I do.
All right. Well, you got any news? Yeah. Any other news?
No, that's all I have for the emissions. Right. You're going to be the guy with the bulk of the news this week. So.
Yeah. Well, that was primarily it. I mean, I figured the Kathleen Kennedy section was going to take up some time. So
yeah, it did. So,
well, all right. Well, let's get out of the emissions.
Good old Kathy Kennedy.
All right, so I guess we can kind of do like a recap. Did you get a chance to see Titans this week? Are you still kind of not catching up yet?
What, Titans?
Yeah.
I'm caught up on Titans.
Did you? Okay, what'd you think? Did you find it's finally like there? We're there. I know we're like one of the last episode before the series or the season ends, and we're finally gonna see it.
I mean, another thing about this season, I mean, I thought this the beginning of the season was really good. I thought the middle of the season was really good. I just think like the last couple episodes, it's almost been like, you know, we're like dragging. Because I thought Nightwing was going to be like in the middle of the season. That's what I thought. He was going to pop up. Oh, here comes a suit. He's going to fight Deathstroke. Then at the end of the season, maybe they'll fight Cadmus or something. But now it's almost like they just jungled everything together. And now we're going to see Nightwing, of course, on the final episode. But like the suit looks good.
Yeah.
But
what about like the rest? What about the rest of the story? You're too worried about the suit. I'm interested in the characters and stuff. Did you like Bruce from last week when he came in?
I like the
dream sequence with him in because we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week because you didn't watch it.
I like both versions, the dream version of Bruce and the regular Bruce. I like when he just, that's a typical Bruce Wayne Batman thing. He's like, hey, I'm going to, his little subtle ways of getting people to meet up, tells them, hey, you know what? You got to be a family, be a team. That's Bruce.
Subtle ways.
And then like
subtle ways. He made up a commercial. That's not subtle. He's got the money. He hijacked the cable channels. I thought that was great. The donut.
Hey, you got to remember that. Oh, that was fantastic. I wonder if they mentioned like maybe he's using Brother Eye at this point, but I don't know.
You never know.
Never know. But I like this version. I know people have issues with him. Oh, he's too old and everything. But I actually like it. I actually like the fight sequence he had with Dick in his mind. Like he's basically just he's almost like saying, "Hey, man, you're fighting the wrong fight." And you could see like the training of Bruce Wayne. Like, hey, Robin can fight, but this is Batman.
Yeah.
And you could tell like Dick is like fighting him and like, but he's like just ducking out of kicks, moving him to like grabbing him by the throat, throw him to the side. And just he's like, hey son, you're fighting the wrong fight. And then it flashes back in the cell, which is probably my favorite scene of that episode where you see him, like he's in his mind, he's fighting Bruce, but outside he's just basically training.
Yeah.
And Bruce is basically training him in his mind. Saying, hey, you're better. You're not
shadow boxing.
Yeah. Which I kind of did. I was like, okay. Kind of Fight Club style, but.
Yeah, that's why I was hoping you watch that because I thought last week's episode was, I mean, it was weird with the donut thing, but then it was that mental, him and Bruce going back. That's why I thought the last two episodes before that were really slow, and then I thought last week's came back, picked back up, but gave it more of a mental thing. Because then you're dealing with that, but you're dealing with Garth, you're dealing with the girls now, you know, because they're all trying to figure out, okay, what do they need to do? Now Corey's issue, whatever, you know, Corey's got, you know, is impotent now, so I don't know what's going on with her.
Yeah, what happened, Corey? Yeah. The flame is literally out.
Yeah, but then you got and then I love the introduction with did they introduce him the shoemaker the last season or something or.
No, this is the first one.
Okay, because the way when they brought him in when they walked in, I was like, man, did I miss something?
I was like, because when he walked in there, I was like, where's he going?
Yeah.
And then you see him in there. I'm like, is that the shoemaker?
Yeah, but
that's a deep.
Yeah, that's why I was like, did I miss something that I didn't see? Because the way they were just talking, like
he
like they already knew, like we should have already been introduced to this guy.
No, I guess he's been around. I like the way he's pissed off at Dick because he burned the suit. That was great.
And the fact
he's sitting there, he burns the fruitcake.
The fact he knows he burnt the suit. How does he know he burnt the suit? He must have a tracking or something in there that tells you even more about what that kind of character is.
I like the fact. Yeah.
And then his helper, in the back office.
That was great. Everything about it was good. I liked that part. And, you know, I guess we're going to finally see what we wanted to see. We're going to see that Nightwing, Deathstroke showdown. But I got to give credit to S.M. Morales, by the way. I didn't think he could pull off doing Slade Wilson Deathstroke. But as far as like an iteration of Deathstroke, you know, we had the Manu Bennett in Arrowverse, and he was good for what he was.
Yeah.
But this Deathstroke that we have now is the Deathstroke from the comics, man. Yeah. Like, verbatim. I mean, they even have full screen, and he's got his money and all that. Hell, hey, you go on this mission, you go on that mission. That's like, wow, they threw Forrest Green in there? Like, that's another deep cut. So I've liked him as Deathstroke this year. And I was kind of hesitant beginning of the year with Essa, but he's kind of proven me wrong.
I was on board with him right from the get-go. I thought he did an amazing job from the start. So I'm happy to see in the whole the Jericho thing is playing out pretty well with him.
Yeah, it's on. And I've seen a lot of good stuff in Titans this year. But hopefully they just don't draw out Nightwing. Well, they can't draw out Nightwing.
Oh, I can't. He's already looking at the suit, so it's here.
He's already looking at the suit, so it's a matter of time. So next week, the finale, it'll be interesting to see how they're going to finish it up and build up to season 3.
Ooh. Yeah, and so definitely interested in that. And then, of course, you know, we're hooked on The Mandalorian right now. I mean, the internet was broken again this week with Baby Yoda. It just went nuts. I mean, all over Twitter, Facebook. That's all I could see. And then Friday, you know, the episode of the third chapter, The Sin, was just like another great addition.
Each episode keeps getting better and better. I think my only complaint, and I guess a lot of complaints, is it's for 30 minutes. I think it's too short. But from what I'm getting for 30 minutes, it's great. And like I don't want to spoil the episode. I guess nobody saw it, but there's something that happens in the end, which I think you said it so eloquently that you never thought you would see something like this in a Star Wars movie, but you always wanted.
Yeah.
And that's basically when I saw that, I was like, wow, okay, I'm in. Like, I was in the first episode, but now I'm like really in.
I was sitting in my break room at work. I had to go into work in the morning, so I had like a little bit of time to kill. So I'm watching it on my phone for the first time in my break room. And when that scene comes up, and you all will know the scene when you see it, I screamed, yeah, in my break room. And everybody was like, whoa. I was like, sorry, Mandalorian. They're like, oh, okay. Don't say anything. I was like, I'm not spoiling anything here. But yeah, that was one of the really better scenes I've seen for something in Star Wars. Again, I just didn't know I wanted it, and now I do, and I want more of it now. And we'll see where they go. I'm okay with the time because I feel, and this is funny, I'm going to say this because it kind of goes against something I said to you about a month ago. I think they're telling the story that they need to tell. They don't need to add extra stuff on there. I don't want them to add too much just to fill up an hour. Tell me your story and move on. And I know that counteracts something I had said a few weeks ago, that I feel like a lot of the mini episodes that they've been doing on Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that, because I want to see more of that, those characters, I guess, growing. But this one, I don't think this character needs to grow. He's your lone cowboy, you know, your lone outlaw by himself. And it just, I think what we're getting is perfect, and especially for the amount of money that I know they're spending per episode. I think it's perfectly fine for 30 minutes.
And the detail too is remarkable. I mean, it's like Favreau and Filoni, they know. I mean, they took a deep cut from Empire Strikes Back when they brought something in. I don't want to give it away, but you'll see it. And if you understand, I'll just use the word ice cream and people will understand what it is. What I also like is the close combat scenes with the Mandalorian. It kind of reminds me of, it's like in this episode, like the fight scenes, it's very John Wick, very Batman-esque, because he's, you know, like I said, I don't want to give too much away. I'll just leave it at that. But like the combat scenes, very close combat. Like, everything's just close right in front of him, and he's by himself all time now, which I'm going to try to find on eBay, that gigantic disintegrator. I think Boba Fett had that weapon too, but he just never used it. But going forward, because basically now at the ending of this, basically is leading to a new chapter now. And I want to see where it's going to go. He's obviously going to meet up with other characters now. And he's on the run.
Well, we do have the one female bounty hunter that supposedly was an ex-rebel, like gunman or something like that. We also, from my understanding, one of the other Mandalorians that we were introduced to in this comes back as well. I've heard an interview with that actor, and he comes back a few times. The bigger dude.
I mean, like I said, this, the guy with the Predator machine gun rifle.
Yes, he comes back. Yeah, I forget where I heard it on.
I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, there was an interview with him, because he apparently, this guy's like in a bunch of other roles as well. That he, like, throughout like TV, he's just one of those character actors that's kind of always there. And they were saying that, you know, they brought him in and he didn't know what he was playing, and you know, just kind of like running through the script a little bit, and then they showed him like, hey, this is gonna be your costume, and he's like, I'm in Star Wars, holy crap. That's when it, you know, dawned on him what the helmet was.
Yeah, the man, and I actually, by watching this Mandalorian series, makes me want to go back and watch the Clone Wars again, because I want to just, you know, brush up my skills on Mandalorian culture and the Mandalorians themselves, because they have that culture, which is really dope. And I think you don't get a chance to see it. I think you saw a little bit of in Clone Wars, but like, very now you're getting little. A chance to see, like, I want to know more about these guys, because they're like a bunch of hard asses. I mean, I don't like comparing things to other movies, but I'll compare it to John Wick. This is almost like the Mandalorians are living in that Continental, and these guys are all assassins, and they're being sent down. It's very similar. It's kind of strange, but it's almost like John Wick in space. So, but like I said, I'm happy with it. And Baby Yoda coming to a shelf, I believe. Black Friday.
No, he'll be coming to my shelf. Yeah. He'll be sitting right over here, right next to me.
Yeah, he'll be here soon.
And I will have to say this one, for all of those of you that may be getting like a little overkill on Baby Yoda, this was light Baby Yoda episode, just so you know. Very, very light. A little bit at the beginning and one cute little moment at the very, very tail end of the show. But the rest is full Mando, just going nuts and doing his thing. And you do get to see a little bit, like you were saying, you know, learning more about the Mandalorian culture. You do learn a little bit more of what's going on with them now. And I swear to God, if I see anybody posting on Facebook this week about, did you see Boba in the background? Yeah, they all look like Boba. All right.
They all look like Boba, man. Boba's not there.
He's not there.
Boba's in the Starlight. Or he's not. I don't know, but that's not Boba Fett. Boba Fett is not I think it's one of the biggest things too that bugs me, and I think you know what I'm gonna say. People think that Boba Fett is a Mandalorian. He is not a Mandalorian. For the last time, he stole the armor. Jango Fett stole the Mandalorian armor. He was never a Mandalorian. They even said it. They even in like the comics and canon, they say he's not. We're pissed off at him. Like, we don't like that dude. He ain't no man. He ain't one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was funny. I was having a conversation with somebody online about it, and he's like, "But I'm like, nah, dude, man. Yeah, they all dress the same. Yeah, of course, they're all gonna look like each other." But all right, so let's go ahead. I know we got a little bit to talk about.
I guess, yeah, a little bit.
So we're gonna go ahead and get into our crisis, the little crisis news, because I know a few
little
things. Few things dropped this week, so.
Yeah, just a couple things. We are, I think we're like T-minus 3 weeks from this crossover, and I believe they released, the first three episodes synopsis.
Yes.
Of Crisis, because I think first one is going to be on Supergirl, second one's on Batwoman, third one's going to be on The Flash. The first synopsis for the first episode on Supergirl, I believe, was like Harbinger is basically gathering all the heroes of the multiverse together to basically break it down. Hey, you know what? Something's coming, and you basically got to split up, and you got to find more heroes. And what they say is they basically are splitting off this team, and the synopsis it says they are looking for another Kryptonian. G-Mike, who could this other Kryptonian they're searching for be?
Who knows? I mean, there's so many out there.
Yeah. I wonder who's it going to be.
Never,
maybe General Zod?
Oh, yeah, it could be. It could be.
You know what? Actually, that would be kind of dope if they did that. Actually, no, we're not looking for Superman. We're looking for Zod. Because they basically only had like three versions of Zod. We haven't seen a Zod version in this. We did. We had a little cameo. It was like in season 3 of Supergirl, but it was nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
It was like there for like 2 seconds. It was like a dream sequence. But that'd be interesting.
I'm
episode 2 of it's going to be the second episode, and this gets me crazy because this episode basically says Kara and Kate Kane are looking for Bruce Wayne. They're looking for Bruce Wayne. And then, as you're going to show in a couple seconds, I guess, because I think you had the photo up there somewhere, we get our first look at Mr. Kevin Conroy as Bruce Wayne. And G, Mike, what do you think that suit is he's wearing in the background?
That looks a little...
Look,
I'm not sure. I'd say probably armory.
Armory, kind of like maybe exoskeleton-y?
Maybe. So are we hinting that this is the Kingdom Come version? Since we do have the Kingdom Come Superman within Brandon Routh.
And I think that's great because Kingdom Come has never been touched in any kind of live form media. So why not?
Yeah.
We have the Brandon Routh Superman, and now we're going to have the Kingdom Come Batman. I'm down for it. Let's go. Let's do it. You know, I'm tired of seeing these photos. I saw another teaser trailer. Just bring it. I think you said it last week. I don't want to see no more. I'm done. I don't want to see nothing else. Don't post no more photos. Don't post no more photos going like this. Just bring it. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're there. I mean, we've only got, what'd you say, a couple more weeks? I mean, it's technically already started.
Weeks.
I mean, it's already started. There's been hints and little things going on. But the actual full true crossover, yeah, three weeks, beginning December. So
December 8th, 9th, and 10th. And then we're going to have Kevin Smith. I think, did we mention that last week where he's going to do a post-crisis, which I think is another great idea. And then they stop there and they'll pick up after the new year. So we're going to be left with a gigantic cliffhanger, which I think is great. Because the cliffhanger, they basically have been open and shut. But this one, we're going to have a cliffhanger. And I'm interested to see which DC heroes are going to fall.
Well, we already pretty much can throw money on one. I mean, I think Vegas has taken odds on him.
Yeah.
But
I think we're just going to find out like which episode he's going to go. But I think that the Kingdom Come Brandon Routh Superman is going to die.
Well, I think so. Yeah, I'm thinking he's probably going to go. I'm pretty sure if he doesn't go, I'm going to say his Adam's going. Brandon Routh's Adam's going to go because that's his last season. So Yeah, so maybe Superman stays and Adam goes.
Adam Show, going to be the new Adam.
Yeah. So, you know, we already know that's gone. You know, we already know Brandon's gone. So I'm thinking, I don't think so much Superman, but I think maybe Brandon. But again, when you look at Crisis, that Superman did go.
The Adam
He went into the, that negative area where, they didn't want to be, they didn't want to die, but they also didn't want to be away from, their loved ones. So I am.
What was the name of that area?
I
forgot the name of that area.
I even read that book, but 2 months ago, and I just drew a blank on it.
I gotta remember. Yeah, it was some kind of area where you're not alive, but you're not dead.
Yeah, and that's the area that Superman Prime bursted out of and broke the barrier for the next crisis that's coming.
Oh boy, more crises.
Yeah, well, they don't have a Superboy here, so who knows? Are they going to do that? But to be honest, right now, the only thing I'm worried about, the only thing I'm interested in about this overall is are they merging, like next season, are they going to be merging worlds? Like, will now Batwoman be in the same world as Supergirl? You know, are they going to be blending these worlds together to where now, Barry can run over to see Kara, or he can run over to see, you know, Batwoman. Is that, you know, is all the worlds going to just, you know, combine into one, or what? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, that's the big question.
Because I'd love to have it.
I would love it too, but I don't know if it's it may or may not happen. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe they have a better idea than I do.
Yeah.
But well, I'm sure we're going to find out.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's Belanti. So I have faith in Belanti. So.
Me too.
All right, so let's go ahead and jump right into the Legends of the Long Box.
Legends of the Long Box.
All right, so we're going to go ahead. I guess I'll let you go ahead and start off your first book of the week. What do you got?
Thanks, I appreciate that. Metal Men, Issue 2. This is done by Dan Dido, Shane Davis, Michelle Diliak, and Jason Wright. Basically, this book is picking off after issue one, which we got a slight back intro into the Metal Men. Dr. Magus, of course, Colonel of the Metal Men, as they're basically based on the, you know, periodic tablet of metal, you know, gold, silver, and all that. And basically, he created these people who are robotic versions of that. We find out that at the ending of issue one, if you ever read the Dark Knight's metal, we were introduced with something that was called Ninth metal. Now, Ninth metal is supposed to be one of the strongest metals in all of the world. It basically is unbreakable, undeniable, undefeatable. So this within the Ninth metal arises, basically calls for Dr. Magus. He's basically chasing him. The Metal Men try to intervene. The Metal Men are unsuccessful. Actually, Gold is severely injured. We don't know if he's dead or alive. And basically, this Ninth metal has a sort of psychological connection to Dr. Magus. He eventually even like looks like him. He basically, because the Ninth metal can form into anything, so he turns himself to a version of Dr. Magus. And then we find out later on within the book, through some workers who basically where the Ninth metal was found in this pit, that where the ninth metal man was found. That's what they're calling him, the Ninth metal man. That basically the pit where he was found is basically not really a pit. And it could be something else. I won't spoil what it is. So far, I kind of like the direction of this comic going. It's like I've never been a big fan of the Metal Men. I've heard of them in the past. But I like where this is going. Like, we had that quick intro, who they are. Okay, we got that. Now we're in the story. Now we're into Ninth Metal. Ninth Metal is all about Dark Knight's metal. And anything with Dark Knight's metal is with the dark multiverse of stuff that I like. And so far, solid. It's been solid. I want to see where they go with this, you know, Ninth Metal Man now.
I keep thinking you're saying Nymph. Sorry.
Ninth
Metal.
N-T-H-N. It's called Ninth Metal.
I know how to spell it. I just, every time I hear you saying it, I'm like, what's he saying? Is he saying what I think he's saying?
It's Nympho Metal. Yeah, he didn't know that? Yeah, Nympho Metal.
Hey, there's different, there's different metals actually, out there. Don't worry.
We'll get there. But that's Metal Man Part 2. So what you got, Michael?
Oh, mine this week. And I didn't have a flyer for you for the Metal Man. You never sent me one. So I'm sorry I didn't have one up there for you.
I never sent one?
No. You sent me Bloodsport and the other ones, but not for metal.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's why I didn't have anything up there for you. But what I read was Batman White Knight presents Von Freeze. Yes, I have, you know, talked a lot about the Batman White Knight series and Black Label. It's a fun read. It's a different, it's a grittier, darker take on the Batman. But this is the first one that they really broke away from the White Knight storyline and told a side story of one of the main characters. And it's, you know, Victor Von Freeze, Mr. Freeze in their world. But in their world, him and the Waynes have actually worked together. And this is kind of the backstory of how that family and that connection got together with the during World War II, Victor and another doctor Victor's father and another doctor were working on cryo technology. The Nazis found out about it. Victor's father joined the Nazi party to try to help out. And the other doctor, who was a Jewish doctor, was like, no, these people are, you know, they're evil. I don't want to be working for them. Finally, he convinced them to join not the Nazi Party, but to join him in his laboratory up in a mountain area. But during this time, Victor becomes friends in his this Jewish doctor becomes a close confidant of his and basically a father figure, which Victor's dad doesn't really care too much about, you know, doesn't like. But as the story goes on, we find out, you know, the Nazis eventually find out about, you know, what's going on, that there are Jews up there. So they're coming up to try to take them. And we have a few incidences and we discover where how Fries and Nora meet at the same time. And then also how the Waynes, it's kind of like three stories in one. You have Fries talking to Bruce now, and he's telling the story of how his how he started working with his dad, Thomas, and then at the same time you see Thomas and Victor or Victor telling Thomas about the story of how Victor's dad and this other Jew. So there's like a bunch of like little stories all along the way, but it's a really cool one. Great art. I mean, you can just tell by the cover that we have up here, kind of in the same vein of the White Knight Presents. So just check it out. And it's hopefully to pick up on the next one. Cause I think they jump back into the story next month for the White Knight series.
This is basically just a one shot then.
It's one shot for the White Knight. Yeah. I mean, you don't really need it. I don't know until we see the full story.
But you've been more caught up on the White Knight story than I have.
Yeah, I think
purchased one issue in it. And I thought it was okay, but I got so many other things ahead of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to compartmentalize. I have to learn that. But like, I have a lot of things I'm reading, and White Knight sadly just kind of fell off.
I'm kind of the same way. There's a couple of stories that I'm waiting for the series to finish, and then I'll go back and just read all at once. And I think you just wait for White Knight to finish up. Well, actually, they have
that's one what I'm going to do.
They have one of the White Knight series already done. This is the White Knight.
That was the first one with the Joker.
Yeah. Then there's a set. This is on the second series or second volume of it. So, what do you have next?
Sir, I have Batman Superman issue 4, which reintroduces my favorite, the Batman Who Laughs. Batman Who Laughs, yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Was that 4? Yeah, that's what it is. It's Batman Superman 3. Okay. Yeah, that's gotcha. The Batman Who Laughs.
Sorry, I didn't say Batman Superman on that cover. So I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it, of course. Basically, this is issue 4 of, I think it's a mini part 7 series. Once again, Izzy, you're the villain. Basically, the Batman Who Laughs has infected 5 of our Justice League members, and he is seeking to infect. And if you don't know who the 5 who have been infected so far, I shall run it down for you. Shazam has been infected, unfortunately. The Blue Beetle has been infected, unfortunately. Commissioner Jim Gordon has been infected, unfortunately. Hawkman from Earth 3 has been infected, unfortunately. Wonder Girl, Donna Troy herself, has been infected. And in this issue, we find out who the 6th member of that is. The way it leads up to it is actually not heartbreaking, but it's just like, oh, man, you know, it's just kind of, it's a bummer almost. But seeing Blue Beetle kind of like more of a darker edge is kind of cool. They're basically going after Bruce and Superman. That's just, and Batman, I mean, whatever. They're because these are the only 2 guys that have managed to withstand that metal. With the Batman Who Laughs has affected them with. And the goal of the Batman Who Laughs, actually, he has a goal. He has built this gigantic bat signal from Ninth Metal. And what he wants to do is bring the dark multiverse into the positive multiverse. And he's going to use the 6 evil members, 6 evil members of his Unjustice League to do it. Good read so far. It's been fun. Like I said, the storyline, to me, I think the Batman Who Laughs finally has a coherent storyline now. He actually has motivation instead of just being wild and crazy like he has been. I mean, this is the amalgamation of the Joker and Batman. This is going to be the deadliest villain you're ever going to face. He has that psychotic, but he's intelligent at the same time. He's recruiting Justice League members. He's infected him left. He infected Shazam, which I kind of like. I think I mentioned King Shazam a couple weeks prior in one of our long box episodes.
Yeah, last week, actually.
Which is actually another good fun read. So, yeah, we're going forward with this storyline in the Year of the Villain, and we're going to see what's going to happen, because the buildup, obviously, it's going to happen. It's going to be the Justice League versus this is Unjustice League, and probably another showdown between Batman and the Batman Who Laughs coming soon.
Awesome.
But a good read. Good read.
Yeah, again.
I forgot to mention.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this was done by Sorry. Oh, I don't think I got a chance to write down who wrote this yet. Let me make sure. Because I want to make sure everybody's got it.
Wait, as you're looking that up, yeah, this is one
of
this is one of those ones that I always say, you know, I'm gonna wait. I'm waiting for the end of the year, the villain. I'm gonna cover all of them. You know, just sit down and just read them all, because it kind of got away from me.
But I don't have letters in front of me. Unfortunately, I forgot to write that down. But it's a good read, so check it out. Actually, I skipped issue 3, which I didn't even realize, but I pre-ordered it. I ordered it from the background section in Acme.
All right, cool.
It should be in this week, so.
All right. Well, like my next probably, one.
Probably just want to wait for, like, I'm going to wait for the. All right, Michael.
All right. Well, my next one is Question. The Question. They're starting a series, which I'm happy to see, because pretty much Black Label has been freaking Batman galore. So, you know, other than the rebirth of the Vertigo series and Black Label, so they've now brought in Black Label, The Question, and this is a, I want to say this is a 4-book series, if I'm not mistaken, and it's just covering more of The Question, and again, I think if there's a character out there in DC that deserves a book inside of this Black Label series, he is one. I think he's one of probably the most underrated dark characters in here. He's all about the conspiracy that things aren't what they seem, and this captures it. This book is just captures the noir, and it sticks true to the book. They don't take any like crazy chances or go like overboard on anything. They stick really close to it. The story basically follows Vic Sage, who's going around. He's a reporter right now, and he's trying to, you know, drum up some news about one of the local drug lords. And as he's doing more and more research, he comes to find out that his mask that he wears, he wasn't the first one to wear this mask. There's been another Question, but when you look at the mask that this other Question was wearing, it's extremely old. And that's kind of where we're left off for the next book, and the cover for the next book shows pretty much this book right here, this cover you see. But he's not wearing like this 1930s kind of, you know, garb or 40s kind of garb. It's Old West style. So hinting that maybe this older Question's a lot older than what it is. So I'm looking forward to it. So far, good book, good read. Art's just like you see on the cover. The art's is captured here as well. It's not one of those ones where they do a crazy splash page on the cover to give you something else. So this is what the art looks like.
Yeah, I like the artwork a lot, actually. Actually, that's one of those things you could just frame it and put it up. Yeah. It looks really, really good.
But and again, like I said, it really sticks to the core of what the Question is, but just adds a different twist to it, which I'm completely fine with, and I'm enjoying. Again, DC has yet to do wrong on Black Label. I need to start getting residual checks from them, because as much as I talk about
them, I think you do, because you mention them almost every sentence.
I do. It's every, and I try to. There's been a few times I'm like, man, I'm not going to talk about Black Label, but that week a book comes out, I'm like, holy crap, this one's really good. And I thought that there was a couple of weeks that I did, or one or two weeks I didn't, because they dropped a, I think it was the Harleen or Harley Quinn. They've got like 3 books on Black Label alone, Harley and Joker. And I'm just, again, like we've had that talk before. I'm done. Just stop making them. I know they're your big money makers right now, but it's just overkill for me.
I agree. So,
and I'm just getting confused on which one. If I forget when I pick up the book, I was like, which one am I reading? You know,
it gets a little convoluted sometimes. That's why I've kind of stopped, you know, kind of reading. I think the last Joker one I read was the Long Night or something. It was him, Batman. Like, where he had that lantern head of Joker?
Yeah, we should be getting the next one this week.
Yeah, actually. Like, I hope that. How long has it been? Like,
it's
a couple
been a
months?
No, it's been about a month for those. Yeah. But yeah,
you sure? Because it's been longer.
Yeah, now
I'm thinking. If you have 3, I was gonna go to your house and attack you to take it. Like, wait a minute.
I've only got the 2. Maybe this one's turning into the doomsday clock for Batman now. We don't know when it's coming out.
Which actually is supposed to be, I think.
Yeah, that's
next week.
Yeah, that should.
Who knows? Hopefully. The story's been terrible. I haven't liked it.
Yeah.
The story's been terrible anyway.
So what's your next
one? I guess I'm next. Bloodshot issue number 3. This one done by Tim Seeley, Brett Booth, and Dalhouse, and David Sharp. Bloodshot 3 basically is the continuation of our super assassin known as Bloodshot. He is fighting against the organization called the Black Bar Squad, and he comes into contact with somebody named Edelon, another enhanced like Bloodshot. Basically, they have a past that I won't touch upon, but I'll just say they have a past. While inside this plane, because Bloodshot at the end of issue 2 was captured by the Black Bar Squad, and the plane, he's basically telling the general like he should have a heart and all that stuff, like, you know, because basically what Edelon was created for was to hunt down the enhanced soldiers like Bloodshot. But during this time when Bloodshot and Edelon are talking on the plane is attacked by Agent Nix. Agent Nix, we find out, is one of these enhanced also from another different organization. He takes Bloodshot back into his lair to recruit him to fight the Black Bar Squad. And basically what the Agent Nix represents is he wants to create this rogue organization to fight all of the enhanced in the government, because basically what he represents is advanced also that were discarded by the government. So basically he wants Bloodshot to fight the government that basically created him. So far it's been okay. Not the greatest Bloodshot stories I've read so far. I think I read better in the past, but you know, it's a good reintroduction to Bloodshot because we're getting that movie with Vin Diesel next year. So, you know, if you haven't heard who Bloodshot is, this is a good, like, you know, reintroduction to Bloodshot. So I definitely think it's definitely a worth it. I like comics like this. The art's pretty solid. And overall, Bloodshot is a character that's been waiting to get out of the variant universe into the big screen. And we're going to get that soon enough. So that's Bloodshot issue number 3.
Perfect. Yeah, it's one I'm kind of interested in picking up and checking out to see what that is. You got one more?
Mm-hmm.
What do you got next?
Well, I think you're going to help me out with this one.
Yes.
He-Man and the Masters of the Multiverse, issue 1. Now, when I saw this in Acme Comics, I was almost like, what is this? This looks stupid. Because I had to walk past it a couple of times. Like, and I'm like, what? They're making a He-Man be stupid. And I kept walking by it. And then I thought about buying a Deathstroke action figure. Then I put that back. Then I went back. I'm like, you know what? Screw it. You know, I usually just pick up my normal haul of 3. Let me get a 4th one. And let me tell you, excuse me. This is done by Tim Seeley, Dan Fraga, Richard Friend, not Fiend, and Matt Yackey. The beginning of the comic, to me, I was hooked. I was hooked right from the beginning. You basically find out that Castle Grayskull is being attacked by Skelly would be, like in any other comic book or any other TV series and all that. Skeletor basically is going to stop, you know, He-Man once and for all. Prince Adam is locked in Castle Grayskull with everybody. He turns into He-Man. He runs out of Castle Grayskull. He's going to confront Skeletor. And before he can confront Skeletor, dead, stabbed with his very, that goat staff that he has, he's bleeding. And who kills him? And he looks up and who does he see? The anti-He-Man. Basically, what this story is about is it's the multiverse of the Masters of the Universe. This He-Man, or anti-He-Man as they call him, basically has been going from multiverse to multiverse, taking the powers of Castle Grayskull, killing the He-Man, absorbing the power of all the power swords. And basically, he got his power from, not Castle Grayskull, but a place called Castle Hellskull. Basically, he is the only evil He-Man in all the multiverses. Now, if you're going to have an evil He-Man, you're going to have the opposite of him to stop him, right? So that's what happens. They go to this other multiverse planet, and you meet somebody called Prince Kandor, basically hanging out with his friend, Beast Man, and Evil Lin, who is just called Lin on this planet. And they're the good guys in this planet.
Don't forget his pet.
Oh, yeah. I haven't forgot his pet. I have not forgot that purple cat.
Yeah.
So basically, in this world, King Randor is trying to stop the anti-He-Man has left. They think he's dead or whatever. He absorbed Castle Hellskull's power. And then you find out a little bit later on when basically Evil Lin and Prince Kandor are trying to hook up. If you don't know who Prince Kandor is, by the way, he's the guy who eventually becomes Skeletor.
Yeah, what is it? There's an episode. One of the... I think it was like the one that came out like 10 years ago showed like the origin of Skeletor in that. So that's where they're pulling this
because from. Yeah, they are because in the original OG series, he was Skeletor. He was never Prince Kandor, but I guess they wanted to update it and all that, which is cool because this works out even better. And then we get into Kandor's room and he's sitting there chilling. And who does he see pop out of nowhere? I'm not going to get to that one yet.
Don't you.
But he sees he basically sees a toy version of He-Man. Okay? Now, remember, this is the multiverse of the Master of the Universe, so you're going to see a lot of stuff. So this is a different type of He-Man. He's a toy version of He-Man. A
lot of throwbacks to everything
He-Man. A lot of throwbacks. Everything. And the biggest throwback is going to come because basically this He-Man's explaining, hey, this anti-He-Man is going around multiverses. He's killing people. He's probably going to be the most powerful being in the world. We got to stop. And Prince Kandor's like, I ain't going to stop nobody. What do I have to stop anybody for? And then all of a sudden, another window opens up. And who do we see pop out? I'm like, the Dolph Lundgren He-Man with the cosmic key. When I saw that, the comic book basically fell. I couldn't believe it. And then after that, basically, you have the Force Ghost version of Gwildor there, too, explaining to Prince Kandor, hey, you have to come with these He-Man. You basically have to go to these you got to stop him. The joy in my face reading this comic.
Oh, yeah. I was the same way when I was looking through my downloads, because you made it to the bookstore. I didn't. I was going through my downloads, or not my downloads, but I was looking at what to get and download, and I came across this one, and I'm like, no. Kept looking, came back to it. I don't know. I did the same exact thing you did. You're looking at it like, I don't. But then when I saw it was a number one, I'm like, let me give it a shot just because it's a number one. If this was a number two, probably wouldn't have touched it. But because
I probably wouldn't have touched neither.
It's one of those things that you and I don't talk of exactly about what we pick up. We do. It's a lot of times it's a surprise before we go live. And this is one of those ones where you're like, yeah, and I did this one too. And I'm like, yeah, me too. All right. We can definitely talk about this, but
I was waiting for you. Oh man. It's just every single throwback you can think of. Uh-huh. Like I'm a big OG He-Man fan as you are, you know, it takes us back to the OG series. It takes you back to actually to the newer series, which was released in 2002, which was really good, by the way. And just adds a new spin to it. And when I saw the Dolph Lundgren He-Man pop out of nowhere, I'm like, okay, whoever's writing this book has got his pulse on He-Man. Yeah. Because now you're going to travel the multiverse to stop the evil version of He-Man, which I think should be Faker He-Man if you want to go OG style. You know, he was purple He-Man. They sold him back in the day. He was basically purple. But he was basically just painted purple and had like Skeletor's like armor inside him. That's basically what it was. But the version of the anti-He-Man, I'm like, ooh. Castle Hellskull. Yeah,
this reminded me very much of The One, if you remember the Jet Li movie, The One, where
he was jumping around.
And this isn't the first time I've heard this kind of storyline. So guys, don't expect you're jumping into like, ooh, wow, groundbreaking, you know, storytelling. It's a story you're familiar with, but guess what? Some of the best stories and some of the best movies out there are stories we're familiar with. It's just their take on it, and they're doing the bright take on this. I mean, they're taking He-Man. They're walking you down memory lane, not just for people in our age, but people younger than us and people even younger than us. And there's a little anime hint, you know, a little flavor to it. So it's like it's for anybody that's ever been like, you know, I kind of liked He-Man at one point in my life. That's what this is.
Yeah, it's basically like all the stuff that you loved when you were a kid. They're bringing it back and they're adding a new story to it, and they're adding the biggest twist of all, you're fighting He-Man.
Yeah.
And basically you have to recruit Skeletor to fight him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very cool twist. And I think any kind of time a comic book does that, it adds this new flavor to it. It adds a different story, a different layer. And now I'm completely hooked. Like, I cannot wait till this book comes out for issue two. I don't know how long the series is. I have to read. But this is to me what I've always wanted in a comic. Like, I want that joy of picking up a comic and you're not sure about it.
Yep.
Exactly. And you're like, should I get it? And this is the first time in a long time, because usually when I read a comic, I'll read beforehand. Like, you know, oh, okay, this is pretty good. I'll pick it up. This one I went in blind. I had no idea what this was. Never even heard if it was coming out. When I saw it, like you did as well, it was almost that double take. I don't know. I'm not sure. Then I had to put something back to get it. And it was literally the fourth comic I picked up at Acme. It was the fourth one.
Yeah. And I think what really another reason why I really picked up was it was DC. It wasn't an IW.
Yeah.
IDW. It wasn't any of the old, you know, the weird, you know, independent ones that you would normally find a G.I. Joe or Transformers on or something from our childhood. Yeah, this was straight up DC. And I'm like, DC's doing this. Okay. And I think it's kind of cool, especially with them doing the whole dark multiverse right now. This is a great take on it.
Yeah,
I wonder if it'll link up with that.
I hope so.
That'd be cool.
I think they had a cross. Didn't they have a crossover with Masters at the University of DC? I think they had it.
Probably long time ago.
I have to look it up. But anyway, I hope it does hook up, and I hope they do it. I mean, I'm loving it. And look, if you never liked He-Man before, you should pick this one up. Out of all the pulls to me and the long boxes this week. They're all great picks, but to me, this is my favorite. Yeah. This is a fun one. So definitely go to your local comic book shop. If you live here in Florida, Acme 1792434, check out Josh and the guys and Larry. They're fantastic, fantastic. So definitely pick this one up.
Yeah, definitely. I just can't wait to see the moment when they have the Dark He-Man meet up with the Batman Who Laughs for the final big battle.
Oh my God. Don't even tease me like that.
Come on, you know it's got to happen.
I hope so. I wonder if Prince Kandor is going to, since he's Prince Kandor and he eventually becomes Skeletor, I mean, does he get like a power sword and does he go by the power of Snakebound and be playing Skeletor?
I mean, he's probably got to, they're probably going to find
him. I mean, he's got to, because he can't fight him as Prince Kandor. He's got to fight him like as Skeletor, right?
Yeah.
Or is he going to become Skellman or something? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff they can do. I'm into it. So.
Yeah, definitely me too. I am definitely looking forward to seeing what they're going to do. I mean, if they continue, are they going to jump into, you know, showing us She-Ra or something?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
You know, for them to link it all up together. So. But folks, that is it for the admissions, or not admissions, or sorry about that, Legends of the Long Box. Right this week, you know, we got the Thanksgiving coming up, guys. So we are, you know, we'll still be around. We will probably try to pop in online here and there. This will be released in our podcast form this week, tomorrow. And you guys can, again, like I said, we're going to be here every week. Hopefully, I'm working out some bugs, trying to figure out some things. I definitely want to start doing some more of this live throughout the week. It may be me. It may just be Kane. But we both work separate schedules throughout the week. So may have moments where, you know, if something really cool breaks, since Kane may be off during the day, he may pop on. You know, do a quick check-in, or you may see me throughout the week. I almost did it this week after that whole blow up about the Charlie's Angels thing. I was like, nope, I'm gonna say that. So, but yeah, this is a something new coming to you guys. So hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Make sure you guys do check us out. You can see us at heroesasylum.com. Also our lovely Facebook page and Twitter page.
Twitter and Instagram at the Heroes Asylum, at the Heroes Asylum. And as always, from everybody here at the Asylum and from Captain Mike, I always say, get to the asylum, kids.
Peace, guys. See you next week.